So I'm a Jersey guy, and I've been obsessed about the news yesterday and today, and I'm glad to hear that my family, thank goodness, is all fine, although virtually no one in New Jersey has power right now. But I was reading the police chief's comments from Atlantic City, who they had said over the last 12 hours they've been extracting people from flooded homes and dangerous streets, and the police chief's comment was, well, they all thought it was a hoax. They just didn't believe it until the water got halfway up their front door, and then they wanted to be taken care of. And in a way, I think it's a metaphor for what we're talking about right now, which is a lot of these issues, whether it's climate change or anything else, are often denied, denied, denied until we see the water up our front door, metaphorically. It's an honor. I mean, the folks I'm here with, I wish Joy Carlson, maybe she is here, but and Phil Landrigan, but a huge amount of very, very hard work and great progress has been made. The other person I should acknowledge is the magnificent Herbert Needleman, who really went through many a battle over this. I'm going to look at some lessons from the world of pesticides. When I finished my pediatric training, I was obsessed with the fact that we were seeing birth defect clusters from the Central Valley and worried that it might be due to pesticide use in the valley. Got a job with the health department. This is one of my all-time favorites in pesticide wars. This is cotton being defoliated. One of the things I like about the picture is a flagger is running out of the way of the cotton defoliating airplane as the flagger tries to go underneath the high tension wires to to turn around and go back again. But the quantities of chemicals that we use as pesticides in this country and in this state are really staggering. And when I would teach young people and young pediatricians, I'd say, oh, I love pesticides. And they'd look at me like, oh, God, this guy's nuts. But they're the essence of environmental health in many ways. They're used because they are toxic. They have amazing worker hazards, environmental hazards, water, air pollution, a series of other hazards. And if you learn this, you have to learn a lot about agriculture. And you really know pesticides, you learn a lot about politics. And that's what I'm going to talk about a bit today. When I remember being a dad of some young children and being very concerned about the fact that they'd post a lawn where they were spraying chemicals, and often back then they were using Dursban and a series of other chemicals, signed to tell dogs and kids to stay off. I don't know if the kids or the dogs could read, but it did manage to happen. But the most heavily pesticide-exposed individuals in our population are our farm workers, the mixers, loaders, and applicators getting the most. But the people harvesting these crops, this is, I think, a great harvester, is getting about 1,000 times as much chemical as the average consumer eating food, simply because of all this foliar contact. And remember, I do about 2-3 investigations of maybe 1,000 farm workers at a time. I'm sorry, 100 farm workers at a time being poisoned with chemicals, usually because they were let into a field too soon or miscommunication between the labor contractor or someone else. We'd always find out of 100 people, 5 to 10 women who were pregnant, and there were always 15 to 20, look at the picture, kids in the workforce. And in part it's being driven by families are being paid for piecework, so having a child out there collecting carrots helped a lot. And there was no child care at home. They were better off in the field than sitting at home. But none of these standards were being set to protect children. And families, you know, the average migrant child in California is 2 to 3 years behind in school compared to other families. And the series of exposures that people were having, it's an intense picture, but it captures some of this. And this is my own son climbing on play structures over by Martin Luther King School in Albany. And this wood was treated with CCA, chromium, copper, and arsenic. And we had never done any studies whatsoever thinking about children's play behaviors. So this lack of recognizing kids' higher exposures, lack of their recognizing their behaviors, and their susceptibility to exposures led to a lot of concern. In 1980, about 8 blocks from here, a child came in, about an 8-day-old, came into San Francisco General Emergency Room. Actually, it was the waiting room for the pediatric clinic, and arrested in the waiting area. And it was a very sharp nurse, and she noticed the baby was looking a bit languid. They did a code blue right there in the waiting area, and the pediatric resident noted the child had pinpoint pupils, very, very slow heart rate, and among other things, gave the child Narcan, antidote for narcotics, but also gave the child atropine to get him going. And began to ask, were you exposed to any, the child exposed to any chemicals? The child recovered over the next 5 days. And said, oh yeah, we had the house sprayed by a pest control operator that operated about 3 blocks from here, and they completely saturated the house with this stuff, including the shelves where the diapers were going to be put. This was a male child, by the way, and many of these chemicals absorb extraordinarily well through the scrotum and other surfaces of the body. And again and again, it kept hitting me, we're not thinking about kids enough. And around the same time, reports came out about huge data gaps. I knew there were data gaps on chemicals, but I did not know that the major lab that was doing these tests had falsified many of the results. This is, if you go back and start looking at some of the other things we're having people exposed to and you look at the data gaps, this is not something that just went away 30 years ago. I got together with colleagues at the Academy of Pediatrics, California Rural Legal Assistance. We put forward a bill and said, fill the data gaps on pesticides. And Willie Brown, who I saw the other day, he was in the assembly, forwarded the bill to the, Gina, you'll appreciate this, to the Ag Committee, because we were going to decide in the Ag Committee about safe and healthy exposure to pesticides. And it was killed. Shocking. We did it again. The bill was killed. And we realized we needed a birth defect registry, we needed recording on pesticide use, we needed toxicology data gaps being filled, and we were getting nowhere. I've just enumerated some of the problems. The other big problem is trying to do the investigations with these populations, especially as a government person showing up with undocumented workers. They really weren't eager to cooperate for any at all. And a lot of things we were looking at had long latency between the time exposed. One of the most dramatic episodes occurred in Natividad Hospital, saw these patients, a woman who was poisoned in one of these episodes with metacystox. She was about 8 weeks pregnant at the time, it turned out. Baby was subsequently born with a series of defects, including cardiac defects, died after about 8 days. Bill Monning, who is now running for the Senate for the West Coast, actually carried the case and got the company to disclose the trade secret records, which show the exact same defects in the test animals that were shown in the baby was born. It was one of the major lawsuits. But a lot of lawsuits are sealed afterwards, which I think is a public health disaster as well. So I'm enumerating, but the big one is maybe no margin of safety for children in sensitive populations. And the legal limits of chemicals in food and elsewhere were set on the basis of agricultural practice. They weren't set on the basis of human health. And in fact, people got upset with me, and I said, you know, we ought to set these on the basis of people's health. And they said, oh, no, these are agricultural limits. They're not health limits. And yet they turn right around and say everything's fine because it meets all the agricultural limits. And politically, it was very difficult because the folks on the coast had a lot more money and spoke better English than the folks that were inland who had much less money and much less political power. And the health leaders didn't quite know what to make of it because this stuff is very, very complicated and didn't really step up. And the farm worker groups ended up fighting with each other a lot. They were sometimes their own, and I'll say that respectfully, they were their own worst enemies in the political process. So we thought, well, let's think about pulling together a strategy. And about this time, this little boy was born. His name's Felipe Franco. He was on the news many times, and he had tetramelia. He was seen at right there in the intensive care nursery at UCLA, where I am now. And I knew the neonatology. She calls me and says, Dick, can you investigate this? And we couldn't do this investigation, just for lots of reasons. So we decided we had to write a law. That's Sacramento. I took that while I was health officer. And we put a birth defects registry in place, a cancer registry. We put in ways to measure exposures in humans. This was, again, referred to the Ag Committee. Mr. Speaker, will the gentleman from Small Firearms yield the floor to the gentleman from Big Tobacco? I mean, this was very difficult political stuff. The American Academy of Pediatrics and many of the colleagues we're sitting here right now, have been chairs of the Academy's Committee on Environmental Health. It was called Environmental Hazards way back in the beginning. The pediatricians kept arguing, and one of the big takeaways that I learned from the pediatricians is Marty Gershman and the rest of them could show up in a legislator's office and people would pay attention. And there was a reason, which is that 85% of the time they'd show up, they were arguing for children's well-being and weren't arguing for better remuneration, unlike other groups that would show up and argue for what they were doing. There was also a crisis going on. Most people don't really care about their problems until the water's halfway up the door, they have blood or pain, and then we begin to pay attention to what we're worried about. So we had a teachable moment around pesticides in California. And I take this not so much as a past history lesson, although there is a bit of one here, but more because there are teachable moments going on right now that we have to capitalize on. This teachable moment was MedFly. There was spray malathion all over the Nobel Prize winners in Silicon Valley, and a lot of people were very upset about malathion spraying. The entire front section of the San Francisco Chronicle was nothing but malathion and MedFly stories for weeks at a time. People were in an uproar, people were shooting at helicopters. It was really a remarkable time. Health committee was pulled together, and the health committee recommended, yeah, go ahead with the spraying, but put in place laws to fill the data gaps, laws to regulate these chemicals, put in place a birth defects registry, and this time the Ag Committee agreed because they really wanted the malathion spraying. Well, I'll skip some of these. The birth defects registry was put in place. Of course it looked at malathion, but if you look down the list of studies that have been done that benefit human health, there are hundreds of studies that are in many ways much more important than the question about malathion hazards. Medicines that might be associated with spina bifida, medicines that might be associated with cerebral palsy, medicines that are associated with tetramelia, absence of arms and legs, or studies that were done on this. So the other thing we had to do was to track pesticide use and to have full data gaps. And Lynn Goldman was the lead on the study at Rosamond and McFarland. And one of the recommendations of that advisory committee is all chemicals in use, even if they're things we don't think are super toxic, like fungicides and things that have very slow toxicity compared to the acute ones, need to be tracked. And California, I believe, is still the only state that has full reporting of all pesticide use. And this is a powerful tool. And we're talking about the studies being done out of Berkeley. Brenda Ashkenazi, a wonderful professor there, has made huge use of those data sets out of the full tracking program. We didn't see an improvement overnight, but over a generation, it's been a huge shift in the population. We were able to get a bill through, a very difficult bill. Maxine Waters carried it for us in 1984 to fill all the data gaps. Here's the takeaway of this one. By filling the data gaps in California, they had to disclose the data to the federal EPA, and oftentimes, in turn, had to disclose it to FAO, the international agencies, as well. This is a big deal because it began to be much more known. This is just discussions about the various laws. I'm going to finish up in a minute and say, but I would say the other people to be given credit was, this is NRDC, their report on intolerable risk. Lori Mott was the lead on it. Pesticides in our children's food got a lot of coverage, a fairly inflammatory CBS story as well that carried a lot of work. And the work of the Children's Environmental Health Network to begin to articulate these issues, because the network had to pull together these multitude of voices and crystallize it. This led to an Academy of Sciences report. And here's the outrageous thing in the 1993 National Academy of Sciences report. Fill the data gaps on chemicals, really evaluate them for all these negative endpoints. If you have a chemical, for example, an organophosphate that inhibits cholinesterase, you have to regulate all these chemicals as a group. Because what we were doing was allowing 20 different chemicals, all of which inhibited cholinesterase, had this common toxicologic effect, acting like we weren't using the other 19. And the analogy would be a doctor giving somebody codeine and not knowing they're also taking Demerol and morphine and other narcotics. You have to regulate these things as a group. The EPA administrator at that time, who was very important in then facilitating these recommendations of the Academy of Sciences into the 1996 Food Quality Protection Act, is sitting in the front row and will be the next speaker. But this was really a huge shift. But these windows of opportunity open and close all the time. And if you're not ready for what the messages are that you want to convey, and we're not all speaking with the same voice, we end up in trouble. And it goes back to the other issues. One of the recommendations, and I'm almost finished, is to establish, this is really radical, establish legal residues for food that reflect children's dietary patterns and exposures. Now, the industry came out and said, this is totally unnecessary, we don't need to do it, everything's fine. And by the way, put an additional safety factor in place to protect children tenfold. And I'm going to regulate them as a group. I want to give you the results. So this said we're going to regulate them over the next 10 years. And over the next 10 years, EPA ground through all these legal limits, looked at 1,100 pesticides, 10,000 tolerances. At the end of 10 years, they approved half the tolerances, modified 1,200 others, and revoked a third of them. This in the face of 30, 40 years of absolute reassurances that everything was just fine. So the focus on children's health has led to huge benefits. This is President Clinton's executive order, and I'm going to stop at this point and just thank you all very much for your attention. Thank you.